This is Will's Band of the Week for October 8th, 2010. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Chris this week.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well.
In spirit.
Yeah, so you're back by via cyberspace.
Yes.
And we don't have Barrett with us this week, so it's a heavy load on your shoulders and mine.
I'll do what I can.
Yeah, do what you can, and let's tell the listeners that they can contact us by sending a direct email. I'm going to switch the order around here this week and see if it changes anything.
Crazy.
You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com. You can go to the Facebook page, appropriately called the Will's Band of the Week podcast, or you can go to the website, willsband.net. And, of course, you can subscribe from iTunes. So that's really what you should do.
Easiest way to do it.
Yep. So there you go. That's the general housekeeping. And so we both have, we talked a little before the podcast in our preparation session, we both have a report to give the listeners. Why don't you start with yours?
Well, mine is that just a couple weeks ago, I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on a trip to Cleveland. And I knew that would interest you since you had been there just in July and did your podcast on it. And so I went and checked out some of the stuff that that you had actually recommended.
Did they still have Joy Division with Todd Rundgren right on the other side of it?
I didn't catch that.
Oh, okay, because I thought that's just not right. But well, so what did you think?
I have to admit I was a little underwhelmed. It's a big pyramid, and
right.
Going in, they brag to you that we've got 7 floors of magnificence and, you know, artifacts and stuff like that. But it really is kind of just the basement where all the kind of the artifacts are and stuff.
Right.
And so, you know, you go down into the basement. First of all, it's $22 to get in, so I was expecting kind of a lot. But, you know, you go walk in and, you know, you see a shirt Elvis wore, or, you know, this or that. You see a guitar, you know, played by Joe Strummer or something, and that's cool enough. But it's not, I never had any moments where I just, like, really got the chills, like, seeing something that was historical. I mean, for me, I think the most interesting stuff was when they had, you know, somebody that wrote original lyrics, like scrawled them down on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
They had those framed somewhere. Because
right.
There you're actually standing like in the midst of inspiration, where it's like you're right there where, you know, so-and-so wrote this lyric. And I remember standing right next to – they had the Aerosmith's lyrics for Walk This Way.
Yeah, and it had all, I remember seeing that because it had a whole bunch of spelling errors, didn't it?
Right. Right. It's back when Aerosmith fans were begging them to go back on drugs.
Yeah.
And you know, you're standing there and you see, like, scrawled into the little corner, like, you ain't seen nothing till you're down on your muffin, and you're like, well,
yeah,
this is cool and all, but, you know, it's not like the US Constitution or anything. I mean, we're not like
well, hey, it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know. It's not some Washington D.C. like legitimate, like, serious thing,
right? Right? No, you know, and I thought it kind of took itself a little seriously, but you know, it's kind of hard as you walk through. You know, they have these glass cases, and each one of them kind of have a theme, a different style of music, or a different era of music, and it was just, you know. I was a little underwhelmed by some of the artifacts. Like, I mean, they've got no Kurt Cobain stuff in there whatsoever, like, for the big grunge, you know, thing that they have in there.
Maybe Courtney wouldn't let him have it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty weak collection. I was impressed. Like, I think the one time that I got closest to chills when I was standing next to some of the John Lennon stuff that they had that I thought was pretty cool.
They had a Sgt. Pepper outfit.
Yes, they did have one of those.
That was
they
pretty
had,
cool.
They had, like, a pair of John Lennon's glasses. The other thing that I thought was pretty cool was they had Jimi Hendrix's, like, childhood drawings. Did you see those?
I don't remember.
They had apparently, like, when he was a little kid, he was in love with football, like pro football, college football. And so he used to scrawl all these football drawings of his favorite college teams, like UCLA and, you know, the University of Washington and all this stuff. And you know, make up these hypothetical football plays and color them in with crayon and stuff. So they've got almost like a whole wall of childhood drawings of football games that Jimi Hendrix did as a little kid, which I thought was actually pretty cool.
Well, that is interesting. Yeah, I did not see that. I did see that they had a pretty big Hendrix section, mm-hmm. But I kind of brushed by it without taking too much time because I was never really a big Hendrix fan. You sort of have to decide what are you going to pay attention to. And, you know, it is a lot of it is just a lot of history. And so I guess, you know, to some extent it can be a little dry.
They do have one of the jackets that Michael Jackson wore in the Thriller video, which I think is actually probably pretty historic.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see Springsteen's jeans that were on the cover of Born in the USA?
I saw this all the Springsteen stuff that they had, so I'm sure I did. They didn't stand out.
Well, they had the jeans, and then they had the album cover like right next to him, and it was kind of cool because, you know, the pocket was worn at the exact same spot.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why that's kind of cool, but for some reason it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not the hugest Springsteen fan either. So I guess that top level, they rotate that around maybe once a year or something. They put something different up there. So the Springsteen thing is what's up there now.
Oh, so that's where you saw it. Yeah, I actually didn't go all the way up there. I was kind of pressed for time. But
oh, okay.
So you go – now I am impressed by the fact that on the second floor, really the only thing they have up there is a tribute to Les Paul, who, you know, being here from Wisconsin is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, they have a big sign up there called the Wizard of Waukesha, and essentially crediting him for pretty much – you know, inventing the electric guitar. And there's also a neat little section in there about, like, you know, the various ways that music has been delivered over the years, starting, you know, now with MP3 players and working your way back through CD players and tapes and 8-tracks and records and all that kind of stuff. I kind of like those, you know, looking at the kind of historical stuff that they have there, you know, showing the way music has been transported over the years.
Yeah.
And I did take some time, I guess it's the third floor, wherever the snack bar is, they have this theater that you can walk in, and there's a movie running in a loop that just goes through all the inductees to the Hall of Fame.
And, oh, okay, yeah.
It goes year by year by year, and I actually sat through the whole thing from beginning to end, and it's really pretty cool. There are three music screens. And it's a movie that plays on all three screens, and each screen has something different going on, but it kind of all works together. So I thought that that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, we went in there, and I couldn't get the kids to sit down for any length of time, so we saw maybe like 5 minutes of it. But that would have been worthwhile to sit down for a while.
Yeah, it's an hour long, and I actually sat and watched the whole thing. It's just and I wish I had a notepad with me, because there's so many songs that they played that I wish I would have written down, because every song was just like, gosh, I haven't heard this song in a long time. I'd like to go back and listen to it. And now, of course, I can't remember any of them. But you do – so they started – I think they opened in 1987, 86 or 87. And so they go through all the first inductees, and it's 3 years in that the Beatles finally got inducted, which I thought was kind of strange until I realized the rule was it's 25 years after your first album released is when you're eligible. And so the Beatles weren't actually eligible for the first couple of years. And then the next year is when they got they were inducted. So, but I would think if anybody were worthy of, you know, breaking the rule, some kind of exemption, it would be the Beatles, because I mean they're they're pretty much the reason the whole Rock and Roll Hall of Fame exists.
Yeah, you'd sort of think they would have been the natural first group to be inducted. But so who was the first? You watched it. You got to know the history now.
If you go to the website, they have them year by year by year. I think Bob Dylan was actually in there before. He was one of the first.
So if they opened
Elvis was the first year. I know that.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So there were actually 2 years where you could go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Beatles weren't actually in there.
Yeah, so it's sort of, they call it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum, though, right? So, I mean, the museum is kind of the main thing. But then they have the Hall of Fame, which is where they kind of, you know, anoint people to be worthy or whatever.
Yeah, and the other thing that struck me as kind of strange is they call it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but it encompasses all different kinds of music. So you have, you know, like soul music, and you have rap, and you have all these different types of music, you know, folk music and whatever, but it's all under the umbrella of rock and roll, which to me, why not just call it the Music Hall of Fame if it's just going to be all different kinds of music, or popular music if you don't want classical in it or whatever.
Well, country's not in there, except to the extent that it's country rock is in there, but not pure country artists. You're not going to see Garth Brooks in there, right?
I think that proves the point, though. I mean, country music is just as different from popular music as the rap is, for instance. So why not have country in there if you're going to have rap in?
Yeah, well, that's a legitimate point. I think they probably decided to go back, and if you go to the very beginning, you know, the first thing you walk in and see when they go through all these, they go through the history basically, and so you've got, I don't know, what was it, back to like the 1930s or something, and they had all, and so I think they were trying to go back and sort of create a tree where, you know, certain artists started what they're going to now call rock and roll, and so now it seems like maybe that's sort of how they tried to define it. Everything that was an offshoot of this Hank Williams, which I guess sort of that would have sort of branched off into country also, though,
country
wouldn't it?
As well, yeah.
Yeah, so, all right. So,
okay, here's the first year, 1986. Chuck Berry, James Brown, Ray Charles, Sam Cooke, Fats Domino, the Everly Brothers, Alan Freed, John Hammond, Buddy Holly, Robert Johnson, Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard, Sam Phillips, Elvis Presley, Jimmy Rogers, and Jimmy Yancey. So there you go. There's your first year. Elvis, obviously, is the big name there.
So that's what, 15 artists or so? Do they do a specific number every year?
I think so. And then they have them under different categories. You have your performers, your early influences, lifetime achievement. They have like non-musician slots, just for, you know, like for producers or something, you know, if guys like Phil Spector or whatever.
Hall of Fame roadies.
Yeah, for roadies, I'm sure. groupies.
They did have like supporting, I remember there was a category for like supporting musicians. So it would be like the people in the band, you know, that were individually not famous, but they were considered to be like really important. You know, for the people that didn't, you know, weren't big names. So,
yeah. Next year you had Bo Diddley, Aretha Franklin, Marvin Gaye. These are just the big names. B.B. King, Ricky Nelson. Any Hall of Fame where Ricky Nelson is in before the Beatles, I don't care like what year. I think that's probably an injustice. Roy Orbison, Smokey Robinson,
yeah,
Muddy Waters. So there you go. Hank Williams is that year too. So,
okay, so like 25 years from 1990, that'll be 2015. So in 2015, is it going to be like Motley Crue, Whitesnake, and Cinderella, and Poison? Will the hair metal start like creeping in? I guess that'd be more like 87. That'd be like 2012, right?
Yeah, one of the things I noticed was that, you know, the lack of rap, that I think the only rappers There may have been some of the early ones, but, you know, like Run DMC is the only real popular rapper that's in there. And so that would have been 1985. So,
yeah,
I think they're kind of actually running out of names. Like this year, 2010, it was like ABBA. Let's see, Genesis just got in this year. It's ABBA, Otis Blackwell, Jimmy Cliff, David Geffen, Genesis, The Hollies, Barry Mann, Mort Schumann, Jesse Stone, and The Stooges.
Wow.
It's pretty weak.
Yeah, they can't maintain. Well, when you think about it, if you become eligible 25 years after your first release, how many bands have their that become huge have their first release in a one particular year? You know, they're going to have to kind of dig deeper.
Yeah.
Well, like ABBA, they were obviously they went back in time for ABBA because their first release had to be, what, 1972 or something. I'm making that up, but yeah.
Stooges had to be, when were the Stooges, like 74, 75, something?
That sounds about right, yeah.
Actually, last year was Metallica and Run DMC, so then you're starting to get into my childhood a little bit, so.
Yeah, I don't think Soundgarden's going to get in. I'm just going to say that.
Well, they're automatic. What are you talking about?
I'm gonna protest it. So,
well, Nirvana's, I think, was first one. I think Bleach was in 89. So what does that put us at, 2014?
Oh, so they're not eligible yet. Well, they'll obviously get in.
Yeah.
And Pearl Jam.
You think three albums is probably enough?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Or just given their, their influence.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, there's no way that they wouldn't get in.
Well, so the question is, 25 years from 2010, in 2035, what bands are we going to be looking at in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah, we've got to look at. Do you think Real Estate will be in
there? Any number of the beach bands that we've been listening to?
Yeah.
Real Estate or
Surfer Blood, are they going to get in?
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty hard to predict. Pretty hard to predict, you know, a lot of the stuff that we listen to now, you know, like, where's it going to be even 10 years from now? Yeah. So, yeah, in 2035, who will be inducted? Well, I'm just hoping to still be alive then.
Yeah. Well, one of the byproducts of the kind of the MP3 era is that everybody's, you know, microcasting whatever they want to listen to. There aren't any huge bands anymore.
Right.
Unless you're starting to think like Miley Cyrus or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's so easy to kind of wall yourself off from the rest of the world and kind of just listen to whatever you want, so that I don't know that even some of the best bands are going to gather enough of a following to actually make it.
Yeah.
I think the 90s is probably the kind of the last era of big bands like Radiohead and Pearl Jam and those bands that are probably locks.
Yeah, Radiohead would get in. I think Wilco would probably get in with their history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. Anyway,
yeah. Good. I think
you know my trip to Cleveland, and Cleveland's a dump. By the way,
did you? I thought I recalled that you said something about being near a hospital or a clinic. Were you near the Cleveland Clinic?
Yes, I was actually in the adjacent hotel to the Cleveland Clinic.
Well, that's where we were, and when we went, that's where. You might have heard me mention that we went through a really scary neighborhood when we went between there. I mean, it's pretty nasty, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like it's really run down, and it's like, you know, something must have been here in the past, but you're going by this stuff and everything is closed down and it's really depressing and it doesn't feel real safe in certain spots.
Yeah, and there's nowhere to eat anywhere near your hotel. I mean, it's not like you can go out and walk around and get a bite to eat or anything. It's pretty much just kind of the hospital compound. So if you want, if you want to go get something to eat, I was thinking maybe I should just like, you know, stab myself in the eye with a fork or something. Then I'd have to go to the hospital and get a free meal.
Yeah. Yeah, it is strange. And even down by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where the football stadium is down there, but there aren't like a whole lot of restaurants down there either. You kind of have to walk. We had to walk all the way up the hill up toward the baseball stadium. And so at least the downtown area, though, seems reasonably clean and didn't feel unsafe to me. But that travel area between the Cleveland Clinic and the downtown was pretty bad.
Yeah, somebody told me that at one point Cleveland was the fourth most populous city in the U.S., and now it's 41st.
Like, it's just, wow.
It's just hemorrhaging people, and everybody's moving out, and the footprint is still there, and it's just, you know, run down and boarded up, and it's just not, it's not a pleasant place.
Yeah, you could probably get a really good deal on a house there.
Probably right next to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah. All right. Okay, well, I won't be able to top that report, but I did go see a band. Last week, I saw The National live. They came to town, and apparently you missed it, and so did Barrett. Now, it wouldn't surprise me that you missed it, except that Barrett mentioned to me at some point recently that you said you were liking the album a little bit more.
He told you that, huh?
Yeah. Now, maybe it was just wishful thinking. But
no, the things that I tell him, I think usually are in confidence.
But. You didn't want that to go over the podcast airwaves?
Yes. So now, were they here the same day that they were here opening for President Obama?
Yeah, well, they happened to be. This is the way I understood it. They, you know, they were booked here, obviously, you know, 3 months ago. And then, you know, Obama decides where he's going to go maybe like a week beforehand. Mm-hmm. But so I think it was probably just a thing of convenience that they happened to be in town. So they got invited to play the Obama rally. And I don't know, like, what I'm assuming they maybe played two songs or something. I don't know. But they were making some jokes during the live show about it, which were pretty funny. They were saying that they didn't know what to say to him, so they were all kind of tongue-tied. And so the drummer said, he said something like, "You rocked it, man," or something. And they were all laughing. And then the singer, Matt Berninger, made a joke about how when they met him, he seemed a little nervous. So, you know, they were
nervous to meet the Nationals?
Yeah.
Critical Darlings?
Right. So, so Barrett was like saying that he was strongly considering going. So my wife accompanied me. She's also a big fan of the National. So we got in line, and we were in line an hour before the show was scheduled to start. We figured, why not? Let's, you know, try to get decent seats. And so we got really pretty good spot in line. So I, you know, I don't send text messages very often, but I sent Barrett a text message. I said, "So, we're going to get good seats. Should we save you a seat?" And he sent me one back saying something like, "I'm not motivated, sorry," or whatever. You know? So he missed it, you know what? And I know he would have really liked it. So I can't speak for you whether you would have liked it, but it was just great. We were like in the third row at the theater, the Orpheum. There's a little section that is like a, you know, a space between the stage and where the seats start. So it wasn't like we were at the very, very front, but we were the third row back in the seating area. And it was great. It was a great vantage point, and sound was good. And they're a very good live band. And I think, you know, in contrast to their albums, which are more kind of melancholy, but live they've got more dynamics. And just having that, you know, a greater contrast, I think, between the loud and the soft stuff just makes them a really good live band. So
is there, at the Orpheum, do the seats go all the way up to the stage, or is there an area in front where people can stand?
Well, there's an area where people can stand, but it's only like 10 feet, you know?
Okay, because I know in some places you don't want to be like way up front there and in seats, because then you can't see anything. People are standing in front of you.
They were, but here's the solution. The stage is really high.
Ah.
So the stage is literally like 5 feet high. So you can see perfectly well, even though people are standing in front of you, so everybody stands. But yeah, so great. Just great overall. Just
Well, good. I might have plenty of reporting to do for you next time I'm on, because this is what my week looks like next week. Bell and Sebastian in Chicago on Monday, Iron and Wine in Milwaukee on Wednesday, and then Guster in Madison on Friday.
And you're going to do this? You're going to go to all of them?
All of them, yes. I got tickets for all of them.
Wow. Bell and Sebastian in Chicago. Wow.
Yeah.
That's hard hitting.
You know, you go through the year and buy tickets, and I just didn't realize that they were all bunched up into 1 week.
Well, I would really like to see Bell and Sebastian. I'm interested to hear their new album, and I hope they come to Madison. But I don't know if they – have they ever played in Madison?
They played in Milwaukee a few years ago. I saw them in Chicago maybe – 9 years ago, something like that. I think at the Congress Theater, and that was awesome. Yeah.
You know, the little snippets I've heard from the new album sound pretty good. So
yeah, they've been streaming it on at NPR.
Oh, they've got the whole thing?
So I listened to it today. I wanted to get a little familiarity with it before I see it in concert.
Yeah, but, it makes sense.
Yeah, but that's a heavy concert load in 1 week. I'm gonna be scrubbing the toilets here for like 3 years to make up for it.
You're gonna be beat. You're gonna be live music'd out. So, but maybe not. It'll be You mentioned Guster before. I've never listened to Guster, so you'll have to tell us about them.
Yeah, my wife's favorite band. So we are going to. That'll be couple night.
Sounds good.
She's excited about that one. So.
Okay, I'm going to play some music, okay?
All right.
This is a good excuse. You know how you find an excuse to play something? After the Boxer album, the National put out about a year later this thing called the Virginia EP. It had some extra live tracks and some demos, and I think there was even a DVD included with it, which wasn't all that great. But there was one live track of a song I hadn't heard before. I'm not sure, this might be on one of their early albums that I don't have, but I thought it was a really good live track, and it just happened to be the very last song that they played at the show last week, and I thought it was great. So let's just play a little bit of it. This will give you a little idea of what they sound like live. The song is called About Today.
Tonight, you just close your eyes and I just watch you slip away.
There's a wall of sound. Compliments of the National.
Yeah, so you're like the only person in the crowd that knows that obscure song?
No, I think quite a few people knew it, probably.
Probably a lot of hardcore National fans, I would think.
Yeah, they had a pretty good reception. It was pretty enthusiastic. I don't think it was sold out, but that theater holds, you know, a couple thousand, so they're definitely well over 1,000. I actually went up to the... have you ever sat up in the balcony of the Orpheum?
I have. I went to see Ben Folds up and sat up there once.
It's very interesting because if you're in... I just walked around to explore while I was waiting for, the first band to play, or maybe between bands. And the front section of the balcony is really cool because you can look like straight down on the band. But if you're not in that front section, then the sight line is kind of bad because the stage comes right up to where your sight line is. So I thought that was interesting. And
somehow I recall sitting there and not being able to see the whole stage.
Yeah, I had that problem with Sigur Rós. We were way at the back, and plus it was 90 degrees, so it was terrible. And I thought, man, oh, man, I'll have to, you know, go early and wait in line if Sigur Rós ever comes again.
Of course, I went to see, I've told the story before, and I'll tell it again. I went to see the Strokes there, but I was way up front. And after we left, we found out that the Orpheum was actually on fire, and the album that they were there promoting while they were playing was called Room on Fire.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned that before. And so what was on fire?
I don't know. The the roof?
Did they like evacuate the place?
They must have after we left. Hmm. I don't know. I was long gone before I guess they figured out it was on fire.
God, my kids are going crazy over the Strokes. They just love them. Yes. One of my 11-year-old twins, he's like crazy over the Strokes. It's really funny. So yeah, it's interesting what they pick out.
I know Barrett really liked the last solo album from
the
Albert
Julian
Hammond.
Casablancas. Oh,
no,
there's an
the
Albert
Hammond Jr. one.
Yeah, I just got that one for my kids. They demanded it. It might have been one of those that I got on Amy Street before Amy Street went defunct and made me spend all that credit. So yeah. That was kind of mean of them, but now I have too much music to listen to. So, okay, so there's your report. So now let's turn to a band that I bet not that many people have heard of, right? You're going to introduce us to a band that I'm going to say like 75% of the listeners have never heard of.
I would think that's probably right. Although, from what I understand, they did play Letterman.
Oh. Now, was that recent?
They have a video on their YouTube page where it's like backstage at Letterman. So maybe they didn't play Letterman. Maybe they just played like a warm-up show or something.
The side stage?
Yeah.
The Letterman side, the stage door Letterman theater.
Yes. Yeah. But the band is Jukebox the Ghost, and the obvious reference point for people of our ilk is probably Ben Folds 5, since it is a three-piece band, which one of the members plays piano.
Right, and I was thinking that too. And it's funny because when you mentioned seeing Ben Folds at the Orpheum, I was thinking, oh, well, that's the band that Jukebox the Ghost reminded me of a little bit. But you're right, because of the piano influence and almost like probably, what, two-thirds of the songs are kind of not, I don't know if dominated is the right word, but, you know, really piano-focused.
Yeah, Ben Folds 5, I think, is different in a way, just because instead of a guitar player, they just had a bass player. And Jukebox the Ghost doesn't have a bass player. So I think the guitar and the piano kind of trade off fairly equally on some songs, mm-hmm. whereas Ben Folds 5, it was the bass. And Ben Folds plays such a heavy piano. It's like so deep and so heavy, and he's kind of banging on it really loud in a lot of songs. I think in this it's just more of a compliment really rather than driving the song. But there is a song on here that I think is definitely, you know, the Ben Folds song. And I think, you know, if you name check any of the big piano artists of the last 30 years, you know, Elton John, Billy Joel, there are all songs on here that kind of, I think, wink to each one of those. There's like there's a Queen song on here, you know, a song that reminds me of Ben Folds, definitely a Billy Joel song. And I think the Billy Joel song is the one that I wanted to play first, and it's called Mistletoe, just to give people a flavor.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good one. How do you get it? How do you get the name Jukebox the Ghost?
I don't know. It's a terrible name, if you ask me.
It's one of those like grammatically nonsensical names.
That should be a topic that we do. Like bands that we love the most that have the worst names. Because, you know, a band like Clem Snide, who's probably one of my favorite bands, that's an atrocious name.
Yeah.
And I think probably one of the reasons that they're not more popular is just because people don't give them a chance just because how bad their name is.
Yeah, they could have just picked an object, you know, the somethings, yeah. You know. Yeah. So this is the second album, right, by Jukebox
yes.
the Ghost, and
yes.
It's the first one that I've heard, and it's good. I like it. It wears well. You put the thing on, and it creeps up on you a little bit.
Yeah, I think I almost guarantee within about three listens, you'll be humming along with the songs. It's impossibly catchy.
You got a second pick?
I do, in fact. And let's go with, I guess the one could consider this to be the hit, because it's the first song that they have a video out for, and it's the first song called Schizophrenia.
We'll be right back.
You know, I never realized it before you mentioned it, that they don't have a bass player. But they can sort of get away with it because the keyboard player can just play low stuff. You know, so it fills in the sound.
Yeah.
So as much as I like bass, I think they have a pretty good balanced sound. Now, there's an example. I think that's, you know, it's catchy, but it's definitely catchier like the third time you hear it than the first time you hear it. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of songs on here that are really catchy. You've got a couple ballads, couple of the popular ones. And, you know, if you're a fan of, you know, gloomcore or, you know, slower music, this probably isn't for you, but, you know, every now and then you got to lighten up and listen to something, something that'll have you humming along.
Yeah. I kind of like the ballad. So let's play a little bit of that. It's called Summer Sun.
Okay.
My heart is in my teeth and I've learned quite a lot. Listened while I couldn't, try not to get caught in the boom, ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. My heart is bound in leather like the book you sent. I filled it with words and I'll pen them again. Drip by drip by drip by drip by drip. Do yourself a favor, find a way. Your car at me with your best shot. I'll be standing there on the sidewalk waiting to see what it is that you've got. Do yourself a favor, find a way to get away.
Yep, there's the ballad.
Wow, it was abrupt.
It turned a little mid tempo in the middle there, but it's a good one though. Well, do we have? Let's play one more. What would be your next pick?
My next pick. There's another later on the album that kind of alternate kind of ballad with poppy song, and I like the I like kind of the mid tempo one that's sandwiched in there, and I believe it's called Carrying.
Yeah, Power to the Piano.
Sure.
I don't think we mentioned the album is called Everything Under the Sun.
Yep.
And that's Jukebox the Ghost.
And the their first one is unfortunately titled Let Live and Let Ghost.
Oh, man. So have you heard that one?
Yeah, actually, it's pretty good. They have a video for one of the songs on there, which my son is very fond of because it's got little cartoon characters in it. So it's a very catchy song as well.
Good for the whole family.
Yep, get it free on the YouTubes.
Where are these guys from?
I have no clue. I don't know anything about them, actually.
Well, you know what?
I should do my research.
It's nothing a little Wikipedia search can't solve.
Sure.
So we're going to find out right now. Jukebox the Ghost is a Washington, D.C. born, Philadelphia based 3-piece rock band consisting of Ben Thornewill, Tommy Siegel, and Jesse Kristen. There you go.
There you go. Got no reason to doubt that.
Nope, me either. Sounds very believable. All right, you know what? I think we're going to just stick with that as our band this week. You know, cool. We have an actual band of the week. That's good.
Outstanding.
So there's so much music out there that, you know, it's kind of ridiculous. So I think we got to like keep it under control. I've been mentioning on the last couple of podcasts that I'm listening to too much music now. So
I got to
edit and only give the listeners the best. So that's what I'm striving to do.
Plenty to report to you on these dozens of concerts that I'll be going to.
Yeah, I don't even, we might not be able to catch you in between them next week.
Yeah. I should also mention on one of the last podcasts, I think I'd mentioned that I'd listened to the Y Oak album 65 times.
Right, yeah.
I just thought I'd give an update. We're now up to 77.
That's crazy. That's nuts.
I thought I should give the updates every now and then, you know, every podcast. How many times have I listened to Y Oak's The Knot?
You're losing your ability to learn any new music because your brain is just like totally like drugged out on Y Oak.
It's true.
It's like a handicap. We have to open your mind to some new stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll try to give you some stuff to listen to if you don't have enough to listen to. We gotta get your brain, you know, it's gotta, you know, stretch a little bit now.
Put a graphic on the website or something. Like, how many times does he listen to?
Yeah. A counter, yeah. All right. Okay. I think that's it. So let's say thanks to the listeners. Thanks, listeners.
Thanks, listeners.
And some combination of us will be back again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.